Broadcasting to North America's Motor Cities, Windsor and Detroit, this is CJAM 99.1 FM. Rat Fink approved.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to Magna Carta Pro Bono Radio Show on CJAM 99.1 FM. Thank you, everyone, for taking some time out of your day to come and tune in and listen to our show. My name is Marie.
And my name is Erin, and we're going to be your hosts for today on behalf of Pro Bono Students Canada. Hopefully, you were able to catch Magna Carta's episode last Friday at noon. And if you are, thank you for listening in again today. If you did miss it, you can give it a listen on CJAM's website at www.cjam.ca, and it is in the archives.
So before we begin, we just want to give a quick disclaimer. So anything we say on this show is of the opinion of us, so only me and Erin, and it does not reflect the opinions of CJAM as a radio station. Also, both Erin and I are students at the University of Windsor Faculty of Law, so we're not lawyers, not yet anyway, and nothing we say should be construed as giving legal advice.
Yes, one day we'll be lawyers.
Yes.
That's the plan.
That's the goal. That's the dream.
Yes. Right now, though, we're both volunteers with Pro Bono Students Canada. I know we gave a description last time about the organization, but I think it's fitting to talk about it again. It's the first pro bono organization in Canada. So our show is one of the programs that PBSC puts on. It helps to give law students some extra practical experience and also increase access to justice in the community while promoting pro bono work within the law profession. So all the projects that we'll be talking about are run by students under the supervision of a lawyer.
And so every week our show highlights many of the great projects that are run by Pro Bono Students Canada Windsor chapter. And today we will be discussing the work that our pro bono volunteers are doing with the Wills Project.
All right, so the Wills Project, I'll give a brief description before we start talking a bit about Wills. But this is the description found in the Pro Bono Students handout. So what students do is client intake and drafting of a will. Students will work with a local lawyer to draft a will for low-income clients. They will also complete client intake, draft the will, edit the will, and present the final version to the client, all while under the close supervision of the lawyer. The lawyer takes care of the file, and it is stored at the lawyer's office. So it provides some great opportunity for some law students to get good experience actually drafting wills. And we'll be talking with Chris and Victoria shortly about their experience. All right, so I don't know about you, Marie, but I didn't know too much about wills and estates before doing this show. So I did quite a bit of research.
Yeah, definitely. It's not really something you think about as a student. You know, you kind of just put it off. And
it's not something you want to think about.
No,
you know?
Definitely. I don't want to think about that.
Yeah. So I found here on the Ontario Ministry of the Attorney General website, it's all publicly available information. They gave some really succinct definitions about wills and estates. So estate planning, and I'm quoting here, involves the transfer of someone's assets, example, property, money, when they die, as well as a variety of other personal matters. Wills, estates, trusts, and power of attorney are all common tools used in estate planning. So a will is a written document that sets out the person's wishes about how his or her estate should be taken care of and distributed after death. An estate is the property that a person owns or has a legal interest in. The term is often used to describe the assets and liabilities left by a person after death. How is an estate distributed? When a person dies with a will, the estate is distributed according to the directions in the will. However, if a person dies without a valid will, that's called intestate. Ontario's law on intestate succession requires a specific distribution of the estate. End quote. So that's a very brief description, introduction to wills. And, you know, like, there are legal requirements for your will to be valid, right? So even if you have a will, if a lawyer hasn't seen it or whatever, then you might not necessarily have, it might not necessarily be valid. There's some, on this website I found, siskins.com, what are the requirements of a legal will in Ontario? There's a few things to think about. Like, one really important thing is that for a will to be valid, it has to be signed by the person making it and two witnesses who do not benefit under the will. So it might be hard to find those two people. They're not going to benefit, but they're going to help you out by signing your will.
Mm-hmm.
There are also holograph wills, which I guess those follow different rules about wills. And it's basically like it has to be handwritten. It has to be signed by the testator. And I found this example online. So this example was on thelawyersdaily.ca, an article titled Holograph Wills for Emergency Use Only. It gave an example of someone out in the prairies. I guess he was a farmer just working on the land, and somehow he got trapped by his tractor. And it's a kind of a sad story, but it's a little bit, a little beautiful too, because he wrote with a knife on the side of his tractor that he wanted to leave his farm to his wife, and he signed it. And it was a very short holograph will, but the court did uphold it.
That's so crazy.
So, yeah. So that's kind of nice.
You can do that now. So if you ever get trapped.
If you ever trapped under a tractor.
Sign away your life on the nearest object.
Yeah. This isn't in Ontario, I don't think. Might not be binding, but it's interesting to see that sometimes the courts will allow this. It's definitely
that's
not.
That's good. That's
yeah.
Shows, you know.
Yeah. I don't think it's what your best case scenario though, right? Like, because
no.
There's lots of rules for holograph wills that you have to follow for those to be valid too. So we're just going to kind of focus on like regular wills for this show though.
It's interesting to think about though, because it's like, who has ever heard of a holograph will?
So I didn't until now.
You know, like, it just kind of shows how there's so little information that's open to the public, like, that we are like expected to know. And that's kind of why we're talking about this today, you know, like, why there's an access to justice issue when it comes to wills.
Yeah.
And why it needs to, you know, like, it should be improved.
Yeah, this kind of information, you don't get taught it, right? Like, in high school or whatever. So you kind of have to really do your research on wills or, you know, go see a professional who can actually give you legal advice about wills.
Mm-hmm. I was reading this article, what is it, CTV article published January 2018.
Mm-hmm.
With it had some statistics. So 51% of Canadians don't have a will.
Yeah.
25% of them say that they're too young to worry about it, so that's me. And almost as much as 25% say that they don't have enough assets to make it worthwhile, which might not be true, like the tractor for an example.
Yeah.
or other people say, and the rest of the percentage, I think it was 8%, said that they don't have a will because they don't want to think about dying.
Oh,
and
geez.
I can relate. Yeah. No one wants to think about what they're going to do with all their things when they're not here anymore. I just want to take care of my things now.
Yeah, we all think that, you know, we're immortal. And I guess the sad reality is that, no, not yet anyway. Maybe in the future. That's a different topic, I guess. But so if you do die without a will, then it becomes intestate. And then there's you have to follow the rules under the Ontario Succession Reform Act. And that dictates pretty much how your estate's going to be divided up. So if, for example, the Ontario statute doesn't give priority to common law relationships. So for spouses, there's a lot of rules to protect spouses. So if a husband or wife dies, then a lot of that goes to the, you know, their spouse. But for common law right now, I don't think there's really much protection. So that's kind of important, especially like in this day and age. I think a lot of areas of law have caught up. Like, I know immigration law, they consider that. Family law, I'm pretty sure, does too.
Right.
But, you know, this area of law hasn't really considered the rights of common law relationships.
I was reading another article, a CBC article from September 2018, and it was about this man and wife, and the husband had died, and he had a car. And so the wife just kind of assumed that she would get the car because, you know, like, she's been using it and driving it and paying for it, but, like, her name wasn't specifically on it.
Okay, yeah.
And he didn't write a note on it, like the tractor man, so I guess. she didn't get the car, and she would have to basically pay, like, a lot of money in legal bills to get the documents to transfer ownership from her husband to herself, and it was just kind of not worth it because the legal bills would have been more expensive than what the car was worth itself.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just crazy, and I think she even tried to, like, donate the car to charity, which you couldn't do, which is... that's sad.
Yeah.
I mean, that should be a good way to solve the problem, but I guess...
No.
It's not an option.
So I guess even if you're a spouse, like, it's still up in the air sometimes about what you might, you know, inherit.
You don't automatically get it. Like, I don't know if it would be different if it was a house, but
if her name was on it, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Yeah. That's interesting to think about.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of requirements that you have to follow for a will to be considered valid, right? And, like, I think it's important to... I personally think it's important to have a will. I don't have one yet, but I probably should get one.
Definitely if you have assets.
Yeah. Like, there's so many things that can happen if you don't have a will. So I was reading, this is on ontarioprobate.ca, and they gave some planning mistakes in Ontario. So if you don't have a will, there's problems. Like, if you're separated from a spouse but not divorced, then you're still legally married, right? So they could still inherit a large portion of your estate. If you're legally married and not divorced, your parents and siblings and nieces and nephews don't get anything. If you have stepchildren that aren't legally adopted, they don't get anything. Common law spouse doesn't get anything. This is all under the Ontario Succession Reform Act. So I guess that's one reason why it's important to have a will, so you can decide what happens, right, to your estate after you die.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there's some things you can't put in your will, though, right? Like, I remember from last year, property. Marie, I don't know if you were, like, taught about this case yet.
Who was your professor?
But, Professor Venkatesh.
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, this case, a man, he had some kids, and then he decided not to leave anything to one of his sons because he was gay. And so the son, like, you know, brought that to court after the man died, and he inherited nothing. And the court found that it couldn't be upheld because of the discrimination there.
That's so great. That's shocking. They wouldn't give the man or the woman her husband's car, but they're willing to interpret wills to some degree, I guess. So that's
great. I guess it depends. It seems like a really complicated area of law.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Talk to a lawyer, everyone.
Definitely. We're not experts at all.
Yeah. But it's definitely interesting. I guess it goes to show, like, the courts tend to respect contracts, I think, between, like, two private people. But, like, when there's something here, like discrimination for something so important as a will, when he should be entitled to something as a dependent, right? Or, sorry, as a child, and he wasn't because of this, you know, discrimination. So it's kind of good the courts can step in there. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the case name. I should look it up, but very interesting.
Yeah, and I think a few of us, or most of us, maybe have heard about family members or friends or whatever, and they get stuck in this like family feud, right? If someone dies without a will, I know like of situations where that happened.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And it just creates so much like acrimony between people.
Yeah, just so much unnecessary drama.
For sure. So this is from the Ontario website, Ministry of the Attorney General under inheriting property. And it really spells out what happens if you die without a will and how the estate is divided up. So there's rules that they follow. So according to this act, and I'm quoting verbatim here, unless someone who is financially dependent on the deceased person makes a claim, the first $200,000 is given to the deceased person's spouse if he or she has decided to claim his or her entitlement. Or it can also, the other possibility is to claim half of the net family property. And then it's kind of divided from there. So anything over $200,000 is shared between the spouse and descendants according to rules. So like if there's no spouse, then the children will inherit the estate. If any of those kids have died, then their kids will get that share. If there's no spouse or kids or grandchildren, then the deceased person's parents will inherit the estate. If there's no surviving parents, then the deceased person's brothers and sisters inherit it. If any of those siblings have died and their children, which are the deceased person's nieces and nephews, inherit the share. And then when there are only like more distant relatives left, then it's kind of more complicated. So I just found it interesting to see exactly how it's divided out without a will. So it's important, like if you look at this and think like, yeah, that's not how I want my will or my estate to be divided out. Like there might be people in your life who are important to you, but don't fall under these rules. Under the Ontario Succession Law Reform Act, then yeah, it's kind of, I guess in a way it's kind of morbid to think about it, but really you want your family to like have the best.
Exactly.
I don't know. Especially with the holidays coming up. And you're gonna be sitting there with your family, and then some people are gonna be talking, you're like, yeah, I don't want these people to get my stuff. And then some people you're just gonna like, you're gonna love them.
You're getting it all.
And you're like, yeah, you're getting all my stuff. I love you so much.
So yeah. Yeah, definitely it's important, and it's like I said, it's an important access to justice issue. Because it can be expensive and so next we have volunteers Victoria and Chris, and hopefully they can shed some more light on this topic to us, because like Aaron and I have said, we don't know a ton about wills, but we know it's important. So we're excited to have them in soon. And so we're just going to take a short break, and we will be back with our student volunteers.
The Sexual Wellness and Consent Committee wants to teach you how to be an ally. Listen, be open to learning from the experience of others. Believe, support survivors and those affected by violence. Speak out, add your voice to call out violence. Intervene, find a safe way to help when you see acts of gender-based violence. Act, give your time to organizations working to end violence and be the change you want to see. A message from the Sexual Wellness and Consent Committee at the University of Windsor.
The holiday season is upon us, and once again, it's time for Home for the Holidays 16 Songwriter Showcase and Charity Drive. The event brings local performers together for one evening of acoustic music for a good cause. Proceeds from the event go towards purchasing food and winter clothing items through the following charities: Outcry Street Ministry and Hater Kitty Rescue Army. The show is on Friday, December 14 at 8 p.m. at PJ's Logger House, located at 1254 Michigan Avenue in Detroit. Admission is $5 with one can of people or pet food or a winter clothing item. $6 without. Please call 313-961-4668 or visit www.pjsloggerhouse.com. 21 and over are welcome. Happy holidays.
Well, baby, wanna be a queen? Well, alright, we all deserve.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to 99.1 CJAM FM, Magna Carta Pro Bono Radio.
Okay, so we are here with our two student volunteers with Pro Bono Students Canada in the Wills Project, Victoria and Chris. How are you two doing today?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How are you?
Good, good.
So do you guys want to briefly introduce yourself? Tell us what year you're in, why you came to law school?
So I'm Victoria. I'm a 2L dual. I did my undergrad in science at Queen's, actually. So law school is a little different, especially the Wills Project. But so far, I'm really enjoying it. I really like the dual program, and everyone at Windsor has been great.
Great. And I'm Chris, 2L single. And my actual undergrad is in law and politics from Laurentian University.
Nice.
And I actually have a master's degree from the University of Windsor studying political science. So law school seemed to be the next logical step.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what made you want to volunteer with Pro Bono Students Canada?
For me, I just thought it was a really good way to get involved within Windsor Law and kind of within the Windsor community. I mean, Windsor's a smaller community, so it's kind of cool to be able to go out into, like, we meet with our lawyer and supervising organizations and kind of get involved that way outside of the law school bubble. So I really liked that opportunity.
A lot of my reasons sort of echo what Victoria said, but I also like pro bono just because it does provide you with a lot of different projects. So opposed to like doing a clinic where you're doing a lot of intake, a lot of litigation, pro bono gives me the opportunity to get to the other side of being a lawyer. Mm-hmm. So particularly with the Wills Project, we're not going in front of the court. We're not doing any of that type of thing. But it also spoke to my interest in being a solicitor.
Mm-hmm. So this is the first time you've done the pro bono, right?
It is.
All right, us too. So.
I actually did pro bono last year.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
I did a different project. I worked with the Canadian Mental Health Association.
Oh, cool.
So we kind of analyzed the Mental Health Act and created a presentation for them that they could use in years to come to train their employees on how to apply the act. So it's kind of a project that keeps giving back.
Oh, awesome.
So what about this year? Why did you guys choose the Wills Project? Was there any special significance for you guys for this project?
Well, for me particularly, I'm only going to speak for myself. Because I am looking to go into a solicitor's role as a lawyer, wills and estates is generally a big area. So I felt that by doing this sort of project, it would give me the hands-on experience that I would need down the line when I actually get into practice.
Good point.
Yeah, to add on to what Chris said, this past summer I did an externship in family court. So kind of I'm thinking that's maybe what I want to practice. I'm not totally sure, but Wills definitely lends itself well to family law. The issues come up quite often. So I thought it was a really good chance to kind of dive into that and learn more about what I could maybe do in that kind of area of law.
Okay, yeah. So there's like overlap then between family law and Wills. Okay, that makes sense. So let's talk about the project in general. Can you tell us what it's about and what you do in the project?
So we were given a client. Our kind of supervisors found clients in the community. There are some regulations on who could be a client for us. So particularly they have to be low income individuals from the community.
Okay.
We met with them and our supervising lawyer who kind of takes carriage of the file. We do everything from the client intake to drafting the will, all definitely under the supervision of our lawyer. But it's really cool because it's very hands on. I mean, we were meeting the clients ourselves. We have just completed our first drafts and then we'll send it back to the lawyer and kind of go from there.
Very cool. And so you're both doing like the same role, right? And you're working together on?
Right. We are working together. We are unique right now because we actually do have two clients.
Oh, okay.
So we are drafting two wills, but ultimately this is a joint project.
Okay.
So you both, in order to do this project, you had to be enrolled in the Wills and Success course, right?
That's correct.
So do you think that you've like been able to use what you're learning in that class at all in what you've done so far in the project, or is that still yet to come?
I've definitely seen a lot of the principles that we've learned in that course come up while we're doing the intake and while we're drafting the will. But it's definitely in a different ballpark. Just for an example, we've learned about, you know, undue influence on a person giving the instructions for the will. And it's one thing to read about it and, you know, sort of look at cases in the book, but then it becomes a much harder thing to spot when you're actually with the client you have to really rely upon expertise as a lawyer to be able to spot some of these issues sometimes.
Do you enjoy the practical aspect of it?
I really do enjoy the practical aspect of it because, I mean, like I said, it's one thing to learn in a book, but it really doesn't mean much until you can actually see yourself putting it into practice.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good sign then if that's what you want to do eventually, right?
So, that's true.
Is there anything about this project that has kind of surprised you didn't expect would happen?
I think I was pleasantly surprised personally about how smoothly it's gone. I definitely thought that I would be facing more problems kind of finding case law or kind of looking up the acts and stuff, but the support we've received from Pro Bono Students Canada and from our supervising lawyer has been absolutely incredible. We were given tons of resources that we could go to if we had any problems, so that has definitely been helpful. I mean, I'm sure we would have had to do much more question asking and kind of like self-learning if we didn't have those resources, but that's definitely very helpful in kind of getting the project going.
That's good. No unexpected bad surprises, and that's good.
Not yet.
Not yet. I mean, we hit that little bit of a speed bump by not having a client come October, but we've overcome that, and now I think we're well on our way.
Yeah, very nice.
So why do you guys think, or why is it so important for a person to get their will drafted, and, like, when should this be done?
Well, ideally, I mean, the whole point of doing a will is to avoid intestacy, and
right.
Essentially, you want to make your own decisions. You don't want to have to rely on the government to do that. So obviously, once you've reached the age of majority, which is 18 in Ontario, you want to think about some of these things, about whether you want to start drafting a will. I don't know if Victoria wants to add anything to that.
Yeah, so that's like one requirement is you have to be 18 to draft a will. But a lot of people, I mean, I know when I turned 18, I probably didn't really have much to put in a will at that time. So kind of there's some triggering events that in people's lives that kind of trigger when they should have a will or consider getting a will. One of them is if you get married or if you get divorced, so kind of change in relationship status. Mm-hmm. If you have kids, if you start or end a business.
If you buy a house.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. Things like that.
Can you, this is a bit different, but like, can you explain a bit what happens if you don't have a will and then someone passes away?
Well, generally what happens is that if you don't have a will, period, or you don't have a valid will, the government will essentially decide where your estate will go.
Okay. Yeah.
So there is a flow of succession where the estate will sort of flow into, and it's a very mechanical sort of process, one that this project seeks to avoid, because ultimately the goal is for our clients to be able to make their own wishes clear and have them executed at that time.
So that's why it's so important to have your own will.
It is very important to have a valid will.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think it makes it easier for your family, too. I mean, if you have a valid will, it'll make it easier for them who, especially if you have an executor who happens to be a family member, which is common, they know kind of what's going to happen to your property and your assets rather than having to go through sometimes a lengthy court process to figure all of that out.
Right? Yeah. I think some people don't really think about their will until they're older, and then, by then, difficult. So next question, you talked about this a little bit before, but who is able to take advantage of the service you're now providing?
I don't know the exact criteria for how one would become involved with pro bono in terms of becoming a client. I do know that our coordinator, Piper and Aaron, have done a great job trying to solicit clients, and from what I understand, they do have a number of people potentially waiting for this.
Okay, yeah.
So it is good to see. The only sort of requirement that I'm aware of is that you have a low income below a certain threshold, but I'm not sure what the number is.
Okay.
Other than that, like other than low income, do you think there's any other challenges that people that this service provides for that they would face?
I think a challenge that a lot of people face is that they kind of don't know where to start when it comes to getting a will. Like, it's kind of something that people know that you need a lawyer to do. You should have a will, but kind of, like, getting started is difficult. So this is a really great service because I know our supervisors did go out into the community, try to kind of recruit clients and people that might benefit from our guidance and the guidance of our supervising lawyer. And, I mean, it helps us as well. We're learning about how to go through this process from the legal side of things, but it's kind of like twofold. Like, we're learning and we're helping the people in the community that may not know even where to begin.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's probably a common problem, right? Like, a lot of people don't know much about wills. And then also, if you're at an economic disadvantage, you might not even, like, have the capacity to go ahead and get one drafted, right? Mm-hmm. So how does your project then help increase access to justice?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, like you had mentioned, visiting a lawyer can be a costly endeavor.
Yeah.
So
yeah, for sure.
For something that is fairly simple, like creating a will, a lot of people, that wouldn't become a priority, especially if you're a low-income earner.
Oh, yeah.
Through us providing the service, it allows them to be a part of this, to get a will where they otherwise wouldn't be able to. And hopefully, if this project continues, that we're going to see a lot more people take advantage of it, maybe expand it, and hopefully create a little bit more access to justice.
Are you able to speak at all to, like, how much it would cost for someone to get a will, like, on average?
That we're not sure of.
Yeah,
every lawyer,
I
believe, is a little bit different.
Yeah, for sure. But definitely it's more expensive than someone who might be able to afford to do that, right?
Mm-hmm. I think it also depends kind of how complicated the will is, depending on your assets and if you want power of attorney documents drafted as well. I'm sure those would come with different costs.
Mm-hmm. So what do you guys think, like, in your opinion, what can be done to help increase this accessibility, like, other than, of course, like, pro bono? Like, is there any other ways, mechanisms to increase?
I think a really cool initiative would be if an organization in the community started doing kind of workshops where lawyers could volunteer their time and educate the community. I don't know if this is in existence. I know in other communities, workshops like these are run, and lawyers can kind of educate people that are thinking about getting a will, or kind of point them in the right direction of different legal aid options or low-cost options for them to start these documents or get them.
Do people often, like, try to write their own will to avoid the cost, and does that cause issues?
People do, and probably can, write their own wills. There are a lot of requirements that need to be met in order for it to become a valid will. But the problem is, I don't think a lot of people are aware of what those requirements are.
Oh,
so you will get people who create these types of wills who end up having to go and have them contested because they don't meet the necessary requirements.
Okay, yeah.
So they, like, think that they have, like, a valid will, and then they end up finding out that it's, like, it's not enforceable.
Exactly.
Pretty much.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. Like, every day I learn something new in law, and you learn how complicated it is all the time, and I would not know.
Like, having the two witnesses present who aren't in the will, who aren't beneficiaries, to witness and sign for it. If you're a beneficiary, you can't sign, so if they did, then the will would not be valid.
Yeah.
So something so simple could invalidate the will.
Yeah, true. Well, since you're in the course now, you probably would know more than even most law students, I would say, who haven't taken it.
I've definitely learned a lot.
Yeah.
You definitely learn a lot of the nuances, and hopefully we remember them later on as we're going.
Yeah, for sure. So is there anything else you guys would like to add or talk about with the project or your own experiences with it?
I think we kind of already said, like, I guess I'd just like to reiterate that we've had great support throughout from Pro Bono Students Canada and our lawyer. We're really fortunate to have such a supportive lawyer as we go through this, and our clients were very patient with us during our intake meeting, so I'm really thankful for that. It's been a really good experience, and I really like the hands-on experience. I think I learn best that way, so I've kind of learned that this is something that I do like doing, and I wouldn't have learned it without the support of everyone, so.
Very cool.
Yeah. And then anybody who really has sort of an inkling to get into sort of wills and estates to, A, take the course, and B, to consider volunteering with Pro Bono Canada, especially the Wills Project next year, because I'm sure they'll be looking for a lot of volunteers, and hopefully they can find volunteers and supervisors that we can grow this project.
Yeah, and you said there's already a lineup, right? Like, people who are in line to be, like, take
the
part
clients,
in your
service.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy Pro Bono's been a good experience for you guys. We've had a good experience so far, too, so that's awesome.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for coming and talking with us. You guys have been great, and we've definitely learned a little something about wills. So,
yeah, thank you so much for your time, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
So we're just going to take a short break to play some music for you guys, but be sure to tune in a few minutes because Aaron and I will be talking about all things exams. So, yeah, don't miss it, and we will be back shortly.
what should I be? Is this the fate that half of the world has planned for me?
Welcome back to Magna Carta Pro Bono Radio. I'm Erin. I'm here with Marie. Thank you so much again to Victoria and Chris for giving us such an insightful interview about their experience with the Wills Project. It's an area that I don't personally know too much about, so I certainly learned a lot about them or from them about drafting and their experience with Wills.
And to any law students tuning in, if you found what Victoria and Chris did to be interesting and want to get involved, definitely PBSC is a great opportunity to do that. So don't be shy. Hand in your application next year. And yeah, it's a great hands-on experience. And I would recommend it to everyone or to anyone based on what I've seen with the two volunteers we've had in so far. So.
Oh, yeah. They always want new volunteers.
Yeah,
people looking
sure.
for new experiences.
Okay, so to end off today's show, we just want to take a little bit of time to talk about what all of us law students and students in general have been feeling these last few weeks, and that is exams.
Uh-oh.
And the stress of exams and the craziness and all of that. And so, yeah, this is my first semester experiencing fall law school exams, and it was definitely an adjustment, a lot more intense than what I'm used to from my undergrad, where I just would, like, study for a day or two before, you know, like, it was an open book, but it was just, you could memorize everything.
No, it was challenging.
Yeah. So now it's a lot different, and it can make you feel a little bit crazy at times. So yeah, that's why we thought it's important to talk about it and to share experiences to try and help other people adjust properly or just find new ways to stay sane. So.
Oh yeah. I remember my first year. That was definitely different than this year. So
it's just like the rush of like wanting to make sure you're doing everything right. Yeah, it can definitely be hard, but so Erin, since you're a 2L and
yes.
you're more wise and experienced than I am, what's your go-to like stress reliever activity during exam season?
I just kind of maybe Netflix might be
Netflix,
something.
Yeah,
I think just something to get your mind off of studying for a while. So that's a good way just to like sit back and relax. If you have a hard time not thinking about exams and studying, just like, you know, watching something, listening to mm-hmm. some good music, like just, you know, moving your body or something, just trying to get away to not be so focused on upcoming exams. Just for a little bit, anyway.
Netflix can be dangerous, though. Once you start that binge, it's like, I need to find out what happened with Serena and Blair. That's what I'm watching right now. I'm watching Gossip Girl. I don't even know why, but I am.
Well, yeah, anything to take your mind off it sometimes, right? Like, yeah, but I understand sometimes binging. But I find that, like, once I watch it a little bit, then I feel a bit, you know, refreshed. So I can get back into my readings.
For sure. I find something that I always do, like, even outside of exam time, is like walking. I feel like it helps so much, like putting on like my earphones and just like, whether it's like walking to school rather than taking a bus or getting a ride, or like walking anywhere, walking to like the convenience store, I feel like it's such a refresher. So that's something I do, which is like, I don't know, a lot of people probably wouldn't, but I feel like it helps so much, even if it's like kind of cold outside, just kind of like, you know, like shocks your body a bit, and then you go back and feel refreshed. So
it's kind of refreshing. It hasn't been too cold right now anyway, at the time we're recording this, so that's a good point. I think walking is a good idea. I probably should do that a little more. I walk to my car to school and that's mostly it, but that's a good point, and keeping your body moving
and there's always another thing to get your mind off exams. There's always things going on at the school.
So
I would definitely recommend, like, taking advantage of it, like, not feeling bad for doing things to get your mind off of studying and to give yourself a break, because it's, self-care is so important, everyone, so.
Yeah, don't feel guilty about taking a little bit of time off, I think. Yeah. Like, once, I can't sit down, honestly, for more than, like, 2 or 3 hours. I get too antsy.
You
just
get
up and, like,
can
you? Yeah, that's good. Well, this for me, like, I get a little, you have to get up and move around, or just do something else for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, cook something, or clean.
Yeah, I need breaks. That is crucial.
Anything. For sure.
Now let's get into a little bit about study tips, how you get organized. I'm definitely no expert note taker, but I feel like the key thing for law students, from what I know so far, is, like, you need to know how to make a proper index.
Like,
which is, like, so hard sometimes, because I find myself, like, either the computer starts doing, like, funky things, or I get all, like too concerned with, like, the formatting, or getting down, like, cool fonts and, you know, like, aesthetic of my notes and, like, oh, my God.
Comic Sans everywhere.
definitely not. But, index, knowing how to make an index is so important, like a detailed index, but it can definitely take a lot of time.
I think it depends also on how you're being evaluated, like what kind of exam have. Like, is it multiple choice? Is it essay format? Is it open book, or is it, oh my God, closed book?
Yeah.
Which is scary.
I feel like closed book is less scary, because then it's like you're not expected as much.
I don't know. They still expect a lot.
That's true. But I don't know. Honestly, open book exams scare me more than anything. Like, because it's like you can't, like, misspell something.
Yeah. But it's true. Like, an index, a table of contents, anything to organize all your notes. Because by the end of it, you might have, like, 100 pages of stuff. And having to find what you need during exams can be really difficult. So having just, like, something that says where each case is, what page number to go to. Yeah, just organization is, like, pretty much half the battle of exams.
Did you, do you do a lot of, like, hypos and, like, make sample answers, like, to prepare yourself to, like, just, like, plug things in on the exam, or?
I know some people do sample answers. They try to think of what the professor's going to ask them, and they kind of, like, work with that, but my fear is that they're not going to ask that question. I just wasted, like, a few hours making a sample answer. So it can be helpful, though, like, if you have a really good idea.
Maybe.
I guess it depends. For me, something that's connecting all the ideas together would help, like something like a flow chart or some sort of outline, just so you know how all these cases are connected, because you get really caught up in, like, the facts of a case, but that's probably the least important part of it. So you have to think of it from a broader perspective. What does this mean for law, like this area?
The facts, I feel like, are more important, like, for yourself, just to, like, know the context. But, like, when you're actually writing out your answers, like, the fact, like, your teacher doesn't want to know, like, what A, B, and C did. Like, you know, yeah. they just want to know, like you said, the meaning of it and yeah, what you can take from it.
Like the legal issue or ratio you can take out of it.
Do you study by yourself a lot, or do you, like, do study groups?
Sometimes I do study groups. Like, I'll find, like, there's a couple people who I've studied with, like, once or twice for different exams. It really depends how you learn, I think. Like, if you find it helpful to really speak these ideas out loud, and that helps to cement it in your brain versus just reading it over and over, I think that could be really useful. So I kind of do both. It really depends. Yeah. How about you?
Oh my God, I can't do study groups.
No, yeah, too distracting.
Yeah. And it just makes me nervous if it sounds like someone knows something that I haven't studied yet.
That's true. You have to do it after you've actually studied yourself.
Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like I can't retain things as well in a group setting. Like, I can get tips from people and be like, hey, like, what are you studying, this and that? But then I have to, like, go home and do the studying actually by myself.
Yeah. That's a good point. If other people are saying stuff, they're sounding super smart and they know what they're talking about, and then you're like, oh no, I don't know any of these words.
Yeah. And that was actually another point I wanted to bring up. Mm-hmm. Like, although that's something that is just, like, a natural reaction, I feel like one of the most important things that you need to remember is that, like, you have to focus on yourself and, like, mm-hmm. focus on what's working for you, what's not working for you. Because it's just so easy to, like, drive yourself crazy thinking, oh, they are studying more than me. They know than me. Their mm-hmm. notes are so much better. But realistically, like, everyone learns differently. And
true.
You're kind of setting yourself back if you're comparing yourself constantly to other people, because that's not going to get you anywhere realistically. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's so many different ways of learning. And if you're always thinking, yeah, like, just that comparing to everyone else, that happens so much, I think.
Oh, for
in
sure.
law school,
it's
but
so
like,
easy. It's
yeah,
so easy.
It's, there's always someone who's going to do better, who's going to know something more. But like, at the end of the day, you have to think about what works best for you. So mm-hmm. if doing those sample answers works for you, then that's great. Like, if you want to practice with hypos, or looking at like past exams is really helpful, I think. Mm-hmm. You can find those sometimes at the library. But whatever works for you is honestly the best choice.
Yeah, definitely. Like, obviously, it's good to help each other and, you know, like, learn from other people when you can. But at the end of the day, yeah, it's about yourself. So, yeah, that's definitely something I have to remind myself a lot.
Yeah. So, are there any areas that you, like, really enjoy studying at, or different places on campus around Windsor?
To be honest, like, I study best and do the most work, like, from my bed.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
I can appreciate, like, a nice coffee shop if I'm, like, doing some editing or, you know, something like mm-hmm. that. But when it comes to, like, studying, I usually just, like, study in my bed.
Yeah, yeah. I have, like, a desk at home, so that's where I'm usually at. Or the kitchen table.
Yeah. Doesn't that get distracting, though? Like, mom comes out with some, like, cupcakes.
Oh, no, I don't. Yeah, I don't live with my mom, so that.
Oh,
she's
you don't
not there to distract
mom.
Me.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's good.
She won't distract me now. But yeah, no, I have a couple dogs, though, so they can distract me sometimes. So I'm trying to study at home. So,
oh, I bet.
Like, but the library I find is helpful, too. Not everyone likes the library because I think they get too distracted. Like, it can be, it's usually quiet, but sometimes there's people talking. Mm-hmm. So it depends if you have a good day at the library and everyone's like quiet and you can mm-hmm. focus on it.
Something that's so weird about the library at the law school, if there's like these like there's this room in the basement, and if you sit on one side of the room, you can hear what people are like, completely what they're saying inside that room. Do you know
really?
What section I'm talking about?
I've studied like downstairs study before, I think.
Yeah, but on the other side of the room,
yeah.
like towards like where the window is.
I mean, it's like an echo chamber or something.
Yeah,
down there.
I don't know, but it's so weird. And I, for the longest
the
time,
basement.
Like, me and my friend would go sit there on that one side, and we would start hearing voices, and we'd be like, oh my God. We get so irritated, and we walk away. And then we kept doing, like, going to that same spot, and then we just learned, like, hey, we can't sit there.
It's tough, yeah. I know Letty has, like, quiet spaces, like certain levels of Letty are supposed to be quiet, but like Leardy, the law school library, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. People still talk sometimes.
Yeah, but people don't usually talk in the main area. There's just that special room that you can like book out, and like people are obviously talking in there. And
yeah, yeah.
I don't know why, but it's the weirdest thing ever. But
well, now you can eat in the library too, which is new from last year, I think.
You couldn't last year.
You weren't supposed to. I don't think.
I see signs around that say that you can't eat, but then I've heard people say that you can eat, so I've just been eating.
I don't know. I just wouldn't bring like a 3-course meal.
Oh,
maybe
no.
Just some snacks.
Yeah, like I'll just like
some
eat
coffee.
A bagel in there or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel like coffee is more dangerous than any food though. Like so easy to spill that and
true.
You know?
It's make bringing a mug or something.
Yeah.
People
definitely.
Yeah. Don't create more waste.
Yeah.
Yes.
Save the environment.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Also another thing I want to talk about. So do you use OneNote on your laptop? Or do you have a MacBook?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I got, yeah, sorry.
So, or it's not OneNote, it's Notebook, or it's something like that. And, like, I thought it was the coolest thing when I got my MacBook. So I was like, oh, like, I can make notes, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, it kind of sucks now because when I'm, like, making notes, I have to, like, transfer everything into a Word document anyway.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so my goal for next year, and it would be a tip that I would suggest to other people, is, like, start your notes, like, your index and all that, like from the very beginning, like, from your first lecture, like, compile your notes as neatly as you can so then when you're going to like make your actual study notes it's like 100 times simpler.
Yeah, I should start doing that too. That's really good.
Yeah,
helpful tip.
I feel
thank
like
you.
It's so like I was like why wasn't I doing that from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but, like something I learned from last year was not to leave my readings to the last minute.
Oof.
I mean like try to keep up with it every week.
Yeah,
because this way the lectures make way more sense when you've already done the readings, or you can go back
for
and check
sure.
the readings after, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for sure, making like an index from the beginning would be helpful because now I have to go back and like make my index and table of contents, whatever, right now.
Yeah, even like I found myself like when I was making my notes, I would go look at like the PowerPoint slides if the teacher had any, and then I'd be looking at like my notes, and then I had like notes where I wrote like the notes from my readings and then I had notes from like class lecture. So I was basically compiling like three different sources of notes into one, and like that takes a long time.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Especially when you're getting it, like I said, into all the aesthetics and trying to be fancy and trying to be pretty and da 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 da. Like it can take a long time. So
yeah, it and when you're trying to study, it's kind of a waste of time to be compiling this. But I have the same problem. Like I have to look at the PowerPoint and then you have to look at your lecture notes and then your reading notes and there's so much information it can be overwhelming I think for people. Yeah,
and that's why like I remember my first few classes or even like towards the end of the semester the teachers were always saying like professors were always like oh like make sure when we're done this lecture like go look over your notes again and like now I know what they mean like
yeah
like make it like organize it in a way that makes sense to you so then when you're studying it's like less of organizing and more of just like putting it together. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. January 7th, it's going to start.
Yeah, next semester.
Yeah.
We'll wipe our hands clean of this semester, it's fine.
Yeah, seriously.
So, Marie, when you read the case law, how do you pull out all those pieces of information to make your notes?
Well, I feel like it definitely depends on the class, like certain there's certain things that you have to pay attention to depending on, like, which topic, or, like, whether it's contracts, criminal law, whatever it is. But basically, like, I just do, like, case briefs. But I find, like
little
for,
summaries of the case,
Yeah, so, like, just the facts and then, like, the arguments. Mm-hmm. And if the dissent is important, like, put that in the argument. And then, of course, like, the ratio.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like some cases, like, depending on what class it is, it's not so – you can't organize it so neatly. So you have, like, contracts where it's, like, very – at least for the class that I had this semester, it was just very, like, straightforward. Like, these are the facts, these are the arguments, and this is the ratio. But then I find with, like, Constitution, it's a little bit more – it's not as organized because sometimes, like, there's things that are important that don't fit into those boxes so neatly. It's more – yeah, I don't know. So it definitely depends, but I do try to case brief all of my cases just – like that, like facts, arguments, and then ratio.
Yeah. And for those like who don't have the legal background who are listening, the ratio is basically like the legal principle you can take out of the case.
Mm-hmm.
So a principle you can apply to other facts and other scenarios. And it's probably the most important part of the case, I think.
Sure.
It's usually like one sentence just or a test that you can apply to other facts, other scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I do like kind of point form. So last year, I was definitely making way too many notes for each case. So I focused, I think, too much on facts last year, which aren't usually that important for the exam. So this year, I try to make sure, like, I focus more on the analysis and the ratio.
So I would go through, like, I don't know, look at the facts, look at the arguments from both sides, the defendant, plaintiff, Crown, whoever. The history of the case can be important, mm-hmm. right? So if this case has been appealed, like, 2-3 times, it's been, it had to go back to a trial again. Sometimes there's, like, loss of past information that might be helpful. Mm-hmm. So the analysis the court took is really important just to see how they came to their conclusion.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Yeah. And, like, different judges have different ways of writing their analysis. Some are easier to understand and digest than others.
Mm-hmm.
The more recent cases I find are more easy to understand. But, like, if you read past case law from, like, 100, 200, 300 years ago,
yeah.
then you don't really... Half the words are confusing.
Yeah, you're like, what does that mean?
I don't know what's going on. but yeah, so the analysis and yeah, then the ratio.
Right.
Yeah.
I have another question for you, Erin. Okay. One that's going to scare all those 1Ls and future 1L
oh,
students
man.
Out there. What was your hardest exam from first year?
My hardest was probably... constitutional.
I knew it.
Ours wasn't open book, so we had to do we had a double-sided sheet of paper we can bring in, and that was and you can bring your textbook, but you don't have like your notes, which are usually the most important thing,
right?
So you have your textbook, you have a double-sided sheet of paper, but you can't bring in any like your class notes, any of the notes you made. So I think that was the most challenging to prepare for. I don't think it was my worst mark though, so
okay, well there's some
but we
some
all got curved up. We got curved up probably, that's why. So yeah.
That's true.
Are there any courses that you're feeling a little bit some trepidation?
Constitution.
I like
and
the
ours
course,
is open
though.
Book.
Yeah. That's good. Well, I did like the course. It was
Yeah, definitely it's like useful material, but it's just it can be kind of difficult to wrap your head around it.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a favorite course this year?
Criminal law.
Yeah.
I have Tanovich, and he's awesome.
Oh, so. Yeah. I have him this year for evidence. Very good.
Yeah.
Awesome. Criminal law thing is a favorite among a lot of people because,
definitely.
I don't know, just the issues and the facts are sometimes really scary sometimes,
yeah,
but, like that kind of draws you in, too.
Yeah, so. And, like, people get really passionate about it because like, people's lives at stake, this and that. So
charter issues, rights.
Yeah, for sure, so...
Do you think that 20 minutes is good? Like, should we segue into some sort of ending? So I guess the main takeaway from this conversation is just how key preparation is,
mm-hmm.
Like to studying and life. And that connects really well back to Wills, right? Like, you want to be prepared. You want to not have to worry about this at the very, end of your life. And it's good to be prepared to set all your affairs in order, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
For sure. So we have a quote, another quote by Abraham Lincoln, and it goes, give me 6 hours to chop down a tree, and I will spend the first 4 sharpening the axe.
Very good. So that 4 hours of preparation is very important, right?
Like
good old honest Abe, he knows what's going
things.
On, how
he knows
important
everything.
Preparation is. So thank you for that.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in. You can listen to CJAM 99.1 anywhere and anytime by going to cjam.ca, or you can also follow them on social media. So go do that. This is Magna Carta Pro Bono Radio. Catch us next week, Friday, 12 p.m. to 1. My name is Marie.
And my name is Erin. It was a pleasure speaking with you all today. Have a great rest of your day.